Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Jackie Mitchell. This is where we pick the best brains in the business world and you, the listener, feel like you are eavesdropping on a really interesting coffee conversation to give you and your business the inside edge. We take a look into the business mindsets of leaders and brands and probe into how they think, feel, learn, manage teams and themselves. We love sharing the knowledge and serve brain food to keep your business mind healthy. To continue the conversation, you can connect with me on LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. So, while our first guest settles in, orders their coffee, grab yourself one, and we'll be right back after this. Welcome back. Thank you for listening. Our next guest is a Melbourne-based accredited business law specialist. He's also a mediator and managing principal of Sharrock Pittman Legal, a boutique commercial law practice. And the firm has celebrated 50 years service to the community, and in 2018 was awarded the Boutique Law Firm of the Year. And David was also a finalist in the 2019 Law Institute of Victoria Award for Suburban Lawyer of the Year. He's also founder and convener of the School of Hard Knocks for Stressed Business People and the Reluctant Entrepreneurs, a quarterly business club. I need to find out more about this. I'd like to welcome to the program David Sharrock. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you too, Jackie, and to all your listeners as well. G'day.
Thank you. And also your new book, I have to mention, Fighting for Enterprise Success Through the Eye of the Tiger. Now, we'll have a talk about that in a minute, but let's just start with you, David. You're a business law specialist, but you've sort of encroached into the field of entrepreneurship. How did that happen?
I guess over the years, I've just come to the realisation that you can be same old. Any lawyer worth their salt can run a law firm in a traditional way and do the same old things that lawyers do. But I got the sense, always, I guess, but particularly over the last 10 years, that you needed to stand up and be different to make a difference. Otherwise, same old wouldn't cut it. You might survive in your business, in my case, in running a law firm, but you wouldn't thrive, and particularly so in tough economic times, Jackie. That's the cruncher. So a little bit of entrepreneurial spirit and doing things different to make a difference is really what I'm all about.
Yeah, well, I think you demonstrate that in your new book, Fighting for Enterprise Success. And it's interesting, David, isn't it? Because 60% of startups fail within the first 3 years. Now, that number is so horrific, and I don't understand why people, media, business people don't talk about that more. It's all sort of rainbows and unicorns. Be an entrepreneur, start your own business, be your own boss, and that, which is great. I don't want to be pessimistic about this. I think that's really optimistic, but there's also this huge reality of those numbers are startling. So why do you think so many get it wrong?
I think basically people get this great idea, and off they go running with it. And commonly it's a crash or burn mentality. They put everything on the line, give it their best shot, not sort of really knowing what to do next or next or next in terms of planning, but more by the seat of their pants. Mm. That's extremely common in startup businesses, but frankly also in very well-established businesses. And that was my motivation really in writing the book, that I wanted to try to redress that and pull people back to the business fundamentals rather than, as I call it, running by the seat of the pants. And in particular, looking at the small to medium enterprises in Australia, which is actually 96% of the business world in Australia. And that's, there's nothing to do with the top end of town. That's only the 4%. Mm. So we're looking at 96%. And when you put the startups in there and they crash and burn, by crikey, it does a lot of harm, a lot of damage to families and people as they commonly fail, and we want to try and avoid that.
Yeah, look, it's such a great message. As I said, you know, 60% of startups fail in the first 3 years. 96% of businesses are run by the small business community.
Yes.
And as I said earlier, those figures are startling. So it's great that you're out there being an ambassador for the small business person. Now, let's get back to basic business fundamentals. I really liked that concept. Can you just take us through what are some of the basic fundamentals that small business startups, entrepreneurs are forgetting about?
Yes, and it's critically important. And each business fundamental complements the other. It's like a massive jigsaw puzzle, and all the pieces are all everywhere at the start of a business, maybe in the middle of the business, which has been run in a traditional sense, and then it might have lost its way or gone a bit stale and stagnant or whatever. And so the pieces of the jigsaw puzzle all need to be put together one piece at a time over time. There's no rush here. Rome wasn't built in a day. Though we're particularly concerned about very tough economic times at the moment, and so that's a great motivator. How on earth do you get your business to thrive, not just survive, in very tough economic times? So it's important, one step at a time, each business fundamental at a time. First, I think it's really important for any leader of an enterprise, that's in the for-profit and not-for-profit sectors in Australia, for any leader to look at their own personal motivation for being in business, to look to have a good self-appraisal, looking at body, mind, well-being, relationships, these sorts of things, and then to develop resilience. Because one thing's for sure, Jackie, in running any enterprise, you're going to hit a brick wall and meet problems, challenges galore. That's just part and parcel of the deal. What you've got to do then is learn how to be resilient and bounce back, not giving up. And on it goes. But also a business system is important, sort of like a McDonald's, if you like, just running in a very systematized way, not by the seat of the pants. With some modelling, some strategy, some good, sensible planning. Most people with planning go, ho-hum, it's not worth it. I did it for my bank manager. Why do I have to keep doing it twice a year is what I would say is a good planning strategy. Well, you do because you've got to manoeuvre around the potholes in the road and see round the next bend. That's very important. Vision, values, principles, purpose. Workplace culture is of profound importance these days. Team building, building leaders, getting customer-centric at each customer touch point, being entrepreneurial, creative, an innovator, looking at new business opportunities, getting out there, shaking the tree and seeing what might fall out. These are all really important things to grapple with, but commonly there's a murkiness there. People don't know what to do, where to go to tackle and get these fundamentals right so that the foundation is very strong and can withstand, the business can withstand the tough economic times which we sadly find ourselves still these days, long after the GFC. It seems like a different planet we're on, to tell you the truth, from the 80s and 90s. But there you go.
Yeah, so what tip would you give someone listening now that is a small business, a startup, entrepreneur, on pricing and finance, for instance?
Oh, well, that's a really important one and a very important financial. Look, being in tough economic times, I don't think it's a good time to be overly adventurous or taking high risk. By all means, in business, take a calculated risk. That's what you have to do every day, of course. And you can't sit on your thumbs and you can't quiver and quake. You've got to take reasonable, calculated risk. And without being a doomsdayer at all, I'm an optimist, but you've still got to measure what might be a worst-case scenario if I take this next step, financially speaking, if I commit myself to the bank or commit to a big purchase or an office relocation and fit out, or whatever it might be, that's the question to ask. Keep in the back of your mind, worst case scenario, if it doesn't turn out right, am I prepared for the consequences? And that's not to say you're not entrepreneurial. Quite the opposite. It's a sensible thing to do. With pricing, well, one of the things I say is the last thing you should do with your pricing is discount. That's almost like a dirty word in business. It's a last resort where you discount your price. You set your price no matter what industry or type of business. You set your price fair and reasonable all round to customers and to the business itself. That's the golden rule. And that will cause you to reflect long and hard on what does in fact comprise a reasonable, fair and reasonable pricing. And so it's quite a different approach rather than I'm going to gouge my customers and get what I can out of them.
Yeah, that's good advice.
Yeah, it just will not wash these days, Jackie. Mm. That's gone, and we're now in a highly customer-centric environment. Every single thing we do in business revolves around the customers, and we must work hard for them. And I would add that as a business leader, the paradigm for leading an enterprise in Australia is one of servanthood. It does not cut it either for your customers or for your team or for your other stakeholders to go for broke and go all out for your own self-interest, needs and concerns and making more and more dollars. That just simply does not cut it today. There's better ways of doing business in a paradigm which moves away from power and control and authority and, you know, profiteering into a servant approach to leadership, and serving with whole heart and soul is what I would say is profoundly important.
Yeah. Now, David, we're running a little bit out of time, but I just very quickly want to touch on, you founded the School of Hard Knocks for Stressed Business People. Tell us very quickly what that's all about.
Oh, that's named in honour of me, a reluctant entrepreneur, stressed business person. We meet quarterly in the city of Monash here in Melbourne. Business community far and wide. They don't have to be our customers. And we have some talks from guest speakers every meeting. We do a little TED-like talk. We do a business book review, a legal spotlight, being a law firm auspicing the club. We do a legal spotlight to help business people. And on it goes.
And is it open for anyone to attend?
Yes. Yes, it is. It's so not just our customers at all.
If anyone's interested, where could they find out more information?
Probably the best thing is on our website, to tell you the truth, sharockpittman.com.au, and that's got all the detail of the business club on it, open to anyone. And, people would
great.
Be very welcome.
David Sharrock, thank you so much for your precious time today, and we'll be right back after this. Welcome back. Our next guest has spent his career in the business of people. It's always a good place to start. From his early days in event management, recruiting and mobilising large volunteer teams for community events, he has navigated the challenge of leading at scale. He is a trainer, mentor and speaker to leaders and teams. I'd like to welcome to the show Shane Hatton.
Thanks so much. Great to be having a conversation with you.
Always good to have conversation with people like you, Shane. Your new book, you've just released a book called Lead the Room, Communicate a Message That Counts in Moments That Matter. Why did you choose leadership as your theme?
Yeah, I think when leaders get better, I think we all know that the people around them get better, their teams get better. So I think if we pick a small group of people that lead and we help them to lead better, then I think we actually help a lot more people in the process of it.
Okay, so you mentioned communicate a message that counts in moments that matter. What are some of those moments that matter?
There's so many moments. I think at the essence of the book, when I was writing, what we eventually land on this idea is there really is no unimportant moment to speak. Mm. I think every moment that we have that's an opportunity to speak to a group of people ultimately is an opportunity to lead people. And I think the essence of it is that, hey, there is no unimportant moment. Every moment matters.
Yeah, and being consistent, I'd imagine, would also be important.
Yeah, being consistent. Yeah, consistent in what we're saying, but also consistent in who we are.
Yeah. So, because you never know, that one person, you could be speaking to, you know, a handful of people, and one person might just have that aha moment, but you might be speaking to 10,000 people and no one has it. So you shouldn't always go by numbers.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I always encourage people to speak beyond the room and to think that they're always speaking beyond the room, because every person that's sitting maybe physically in front of you is representing a team, an organization, a circle of peers, of friends, of family. Those people represent so many more people. Mm. And so, yeah, we're speaking to much more than just the people in front of us every time.
Yeah, well, that's the premise of how social media works, isn't it? So that's how we work as people. And if more business people actually thought about that a bit more deeply, to think that what message are you communicating? And is it a message that's simple enough to then be repeated again without it losing its theme, I suppose?
Yeah, I mean, everything we say is ultimately heard by somebody, overheard by somebody else, shared with those people, and then amplified to the rest of the world. And so I always encourage people, if you're going to say something, you need to be prepared for it to be amplified to the world. And if you're not, I'd definitely consider whether it's worth saying.
Yeah, okay. Now, I noticed you've got three big obsessions, so I'm just going to touch on those. And the first one, I particularly like positioning. Tell us a little bit more what you mean by that.
Yeah, I think this idea of positioning is, I think the world of leadership communication has changed, especially, I think you touched on it with the idea of social media, in the sense that at any given moment, something we say now can be blown up and shared with the world. I mean, whether you're starting a business and you think, well, you know, I've only got a few connections right now, but those people are connected to somebody who's connected to somebody else. And so there's potential for something we say now to really influence far beyond our own circle or our own network. And so I think positioning is really about how people place us in their mind. And so I often ask people is, you know, how would people place you in their mind? And the better question is that how you want to be placed? And if not, what can you do to change that? What can you do to shift that?
Yeah, which is all related back to the power of the personal brand, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah, I think I often think personal brand is a part of your positioning. I think it runs a whole lot deeper than that. I think there's behind the scenes in terms of who you are, your character, which then gets exposed publicly and people see it as your credibility. There's also your own narrative, which is the things that you say about yourself, but then that becomes your reputation, which is what other people would say about you.
Mm. Yeah, and it's sort of trying to figure out which piece of real estate you want to own in your stakeholder's mind, I suppose, or customer's mind. And you could have your own narrative, but if it's the same narrative as all your competitors are saying, then it's something worth considering that maybe you need to find a new gap to fill.
Yeah, I mean, Patty McCord, who was the chief people officer at Netflix, she said, if people aren't informed by you, they'll probably be misinformed by somebody else. And I think it's just about deciding, okay, well, what's that piece of real estate? What's that place that I want to own? And what can I do to be reinforcing that and making decisions that kind of align with that?
Yeah. Now, your second obsession is messaging. Really, yeah. Really important. Tell me about that obsession.
Yeah, I think the big difference here is the difference between just saying something and having something valuable to say. Messaging, I think, as you know, is this piece of going, do I have something that's valuable to say? And then how do I say that in a way that actually cuts through? Because, I mean, we have so much access to information. We've got more access to information in the palm of our hand than we've ever had before. And so I think it's becoming more and more challenging to make sure that when we have a message that it cuts through all of that noise and actually resonates and sticks to the people who we're communicating to.
Yeah, that's really good. Now, your third one, developing. Getting better at thinking or investing in yourself. This is a real theme at the moment and a great theme. Tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah, I think we always need to be asking ourselves, well, how could I get better at what I'm doing here? I think it's a piece of a much bigger puzzle. Obviously, we need to make sure we're positioned well. Yes, we need to have something to say, but we also need to make sure that we're out there just
you know, getting our feet on the ground and running it out and practicing it and developing it, just like the way we learn to play a guitar, we learn to drive a golf ball. Anything we do takes time, investment, and practice. And I think it would be wrong to assume that the person who's, you know, driving a dead straight golf ball or the person who's leaping through the air has done that without some kind of investment, time, and practice, and probably a bunch of failure along the way as well. So I think we need to get better at how we fail as well as how we invest in ourselves.
Yeah. So how could you leverage your influence?
To leverage your influence?
Yeah. So what sort of tools could you use to leverage your influence?
Yeah. I think once you've decided, well, how is it that I want to be known? And you've really decided, yeah, this is the narrative that I want to create for myself. I mean, it's now then just to ask the question, what can I do with that? So, I mean, there's ways that you can write regularly on that subject matter. You can share your ideas with the world. I think one of the challenges, we have really great ideas and we're really great subject matter experts, but we often don't share that and contribute that with to the world. And so it's finding what are some of the avenues that I can communicate with that, whether it's writing LinkedIn articles, whether it's writing through your own website, whether it's just generating a list of people, a bit of a tribe and a bit of a community that you can share those ideas with. The important thing is just to start getting those ideas out into the world and having the confidence to publish and share those ideas.
Yeah, now I noticed in your bio it said that you had a fear of public speaking. Is that right?
Yeah, it's quite ironic, really, when you think about it, that the whole book is based around this. And I think a big reason as to why I wrote the book is I often find people have two challenges around public speaking. The first one is usually this sense of confidence, which is, you know, I'm not really sure if I can do it. Or the other one is really that sense of clarity, which is, you know, I've got some ideas, I just don't know how to share them. And I've honestly found the best way to address that is the confidence piece is just pure practice, giving people the chance to do something. And to deal with the clarity issues, just giving people a process or a framework that can help them, almost like a bit of scaffolding or a set of training wheels around the ideas. But the book for me is really just a set of training wheels or scaffolding or a bit of a process for people that can follow, to hopefully just to give them the chance to get out there and practice more.
So firstly, how did you know that you had a fear of public speaking? What were the clues?
Yeah, I think any time somebody mentioned the opportunity to come and stand in front of a group of people and I felt like I was going to throw up, that's usually a pretty good sign.
Okay, yep.
feeling sick in your stomach. And often there's the, you know, the often symptoms we see, you know, you're shaking hands, you're shaking voice, you get a bit sweaty, feeling a bit anxious around even just the idea of getting up to speak. I think we can learn that those are actually very normal symptoms over time, but they're probably a good indicator that something is triggering some kind of fight or flight response for you.
Yeah, and so what did you do to get over it?
Yeah, I think the first thing is you've got to be able to recognise what's actually taking place. So anytime you're feeling, you know, sick in your stomach or your hands are shaking, that's actually a very normal threat response, and it's basically protected us and kept us safe for a long time. And so when we recognise what's actually taking place, we don't read into the wrong thing. So we're not thinking that, you know, it's about anxiety or nerves. We're just going, okay, where am I feeling threatened right now? And it's probably as a result of some internal conversation we're having with ourselves. And maybe the conversation is, you can't make a mistake, don't stuff this up. And so we need to get control over that conversation, begin to reframe that in a way that's a bit more helpful for you. So choosing to reframe some of those internal conversations. And then ultimately, the next step is just to refocus our attention on the people in the room that we're speaking to. It often tends to pull our focus very internal, and I think one of the great ways to overcome that is to focus our attention out.
Yeah, that's a really good tip. What's one of the self-talk lines that you give yourself now, Shane, just before you're about to speak to any size group? Is there a mantra or a phrase that you goes through your head?
Yeah, I think there's lots of conversations that I tended to have internally that were very fixed beliefs, which is, you know, you can't make a mistake, you can't stuff this up, you know, it has to be perfect. I think what I've learned now is people are actually okay and they forgive you for being imperfect. They often won't forgive you for being unprepared, but they will forgive you for being imperfect. So now before I'm getting up, I'm saying to myself, you know what, if you make a mistake, that's okay, you're human. Just keep moving forward. And I honestly find that when they're not those fixed beliefs, it actually makes it a lot easier to stand up and speak.
Yeah, one of my techniques is to make fun of myself. I think, well, if I do that first and get in before anyone else can, it's a bit common, much more common. But yeah, it's certainly a very common, much more common issue. And people in business have to speak, whether you're not always speaking in conferences or seminars, but you might be speaking to your team, you might be going for a job interview, you might be pitching for business. There's lots of speaking to be done in business. So I just wish that somehow we could practice that a bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, often people who are very entrepreneurial, they're starting businesses, or they've got great ideas, and they need to share those ideas with the world. It can be that one thing that stands in the way of a really great idea getting out into the world. And yeah, I definitely think we need to move past it.
Well, it's funny. It's one of my theories, one of them, about social media. It's like you can get your ideas and thoughts heard without having to get up and speak publicly.
Yeah. And the challenge then becomes that there's just so much noise in that space.
Yes, right.
That it makes it harder and harder to get your idea to cut through.
Exactly right. So go back to practicing your public speaking. That's what it always comes back to. Anyway, Shane Hatton, thank you so much for your precious time today. Your new book, Lead the Room, Communicate a Message That Counts in Moments That Matter. People can find that book at your website, shanehatton.com. And I believe you hang around LinkedIn and Twitter as well.
I certainly do.
Wonderful. Thank you again.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thank you for listening. We'll be right back after this very short break. Welcome back. Our next guest is an expert in career development, talent management, and organisational leadership. He is the co-founder of HR consulting firm Deliberate Practice, and he helps aspiring, emerging, and experienced leaders to develop their everyday skill set. And he's just written his first book titled Career Conversations, How to Get the Best from Your Talent Pool. Welcome to the show, Greg Smith.
Thank you very much, Jackie.
Good to have you here. Your first book, congratulations. It's always quite an achievement, that first one.
It is, thank you.
Was the process easy, hard? What was it for you?
Well, it took 2 years, and I Googled how to write a book.
Oh, really?
oddly enough, it said expect it to take 2 years, and from the day I started writing it to the day it was published was exactly 2 years. So it was a thoroughly enjoyable experience.
Oh, that's good. Did you have some guidance? Did you get some mentor or some advice along the way?
Not really. I just, as I said, looked at what was available on the internet on how to write a book, and I had this idea for this particular book gestating for quite some time before I put pen to paper. But largely just got on with doing it, which was pretty much what the advice was that I was given.
Okay.
Outline and start writing.
Okay. Yeah. Did you have a process? Like, did you say, right, I'm going to write for 30 minutes every day, or did you go for 3 hour blocks?
Yeah, I tried to do a word count every day, but there were some days that I didn't make it at all, and other days where the words just flowed. But I'd have to say also my publisher John Wiley was just terrific in guiding me, particularly with the finished work through to making sure that it was actually achieving my objectives and structurally was correct, and of course the expression. So, but I can't speak enough for John Wiley and the whole team there in terms of helping me.
Yeah, well, they're consistently good. So I think you've chosen well there. Now, yeah. I enjoyed it very much. I found it really easy to read. And there was a couple of elements there in it that I found particularly attractive. And one, it was chapter 3, Fit Your Own Mask First. And you use an Oscar Wilde quote, which I do like this one, Be Yourself, Everyone Else is Taken. So can you just tell us a little bit about what you mean by Fit Your Own Mask First?
Sure. Well, like with any leadership activity, there's a lot that's spoken about being comfortable in your own skin to be a great leader. And that's so true for being a career coaching leader. So to be able to help other people and help them with their own self-awareness, you really need to be pretty in touch with your own capabilities and attributes and values, and in that way then you can help others do that. So that's why I had that idea of fit your own mask first. before you start trying to help other people.
Yeah, and I think that's somehow overlooked a lot. Have you had a, is that your experience?
Yeah, surprisingly, you know, the work that I've been involved in with very, very senior leaders who find starting from that position of actually having a good look at their own capabilities and attributes and competencies and values, that they find it quite a cathartic experience and thinking, gee, I've often had it said, again, by senior leaders, how enlightening they've found it and they wish they'd done it a number of years earlier.
Yeah, I think that's really key. And you talk about listening, and there was one heading that you had that really took my attention, and I loved it. It was persuade with your ears. I had never heard that before, and I thought that was wonderful. So tell us a little bit what you meant by that.
Well, I think if you know, listening is one of those skills that you never stop learning to develop, and that's why I don't like attaching a rating to it in terms of how good is your listening skills, because I think if you know wherever you rate yourself, you know, if you said rating yourself 4 out of 5, you think, well, I'm nearly as good as I can be. But I think, I'm not a fan of that, because I don't think you ever should stop developing that skill. It should be a lifelong journey, no matter how good you are now. I think if there was something that you could take away from even today's conversation, Jackie, it would be just that. You know, really focus on developing your listening skills. And I've got a saying that you don't know the question you've asked till you've actually heard the answer to it. And I think that's so true. And I think if you can have your radar up and listen with more than your ears, so you know, watching for people's animation and their body language and their tone of voice, et cetera, are all important signals in terms of what they may be trying to convey to you more than the actual words they use.
Yeah, that's a great insight. The other area, and I suppose I had a personal interest in this, or a professional interest, was about what's your personal brand. Mm. So just tell us a little bit about how important a personal brand is, not so much for a entrepreneur, but an employee. So why is it important for an employee to have a personal brand?
Well, it's really, really quite critical. And the reality is everyone's got a personal brand. They may not even know what it, they may not know that, but they actually do have a personal brand. And so it's a way of expressing what you stand for. And that goes right to your values, most importantly. And the applications for it nowadays is in, particularly in social media like LinkedIn, for instance, as a professional network. Mm. It's really critical that you manage your own brand and make sure that the perceptions are matching reality. And the best way to do that is to take charge of it yourself and not let others craft it for you, but actually craft your own brand, because it's going to effectively be what you stand for, and that will impact on what potential employers may see in you, or perhaps potential clients of your business may see in you. So it's a really, really critical aspect to develop and cultivate. And we're very familiar with product brands, but when it comes to our own personal brands, we don't pay, or sometimes we don't pay as much attention to it as we should.
Yeah, default or design. People will come up with that either way. So design's
right.
Always going to be the preferable route, I'd say.
Yeah.
And also with employees, if you're looking at if you're ambitious within an organisation, or just wanting to get noticed, or wanting to sort of get out there, sometimes your own perception of yourself can be quite different from how others see you. So how would you advise an employee to get feedback from how other people perceive you?
Well, there's some really, really standard ways of doing that. If you're a leader now, you've probably had a 360 done, or maybe you haven't, but that's a great place to start, having a 360-degree survey conducted. And, you know, your organisation may routinely do that already. But if they don't, I'd perhaps suggest doing that is a great way to do that. And also just talking to other people, just ask them, what are your perceptions? And looking at what people write about you and what they post on social media, for instance, are other valuable sources. But in a leadership context, certainly a 360-degree feedback survey is a great way to get some very direct and objective feedback.
Yeah, another idea I suggest is, you mentioned LinkedIn, is to ask for testimonials and then start looking at the particularly the verbs or adjectives that people are using to describe you, and start looking for some common threads, and that might then give you an insight into it as well.
That's a terrific idea, Jackie.
Yeah. So speaking of LinkedIn, Greg, I noticed there, and it's always been a topic of interest for me, and I can never, I always have this disagreement with a number of LinkedIn experts that can never agree. Do you write your LinkedIn profile in the first person or do you write it in the third person? What's your view?
Well, my view is to write it in the first person.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike... perhaps a resume, for instance, which I'm not a fan of writing in the first person. But in a LinkedIn profile is really, really important, and it's a way of you actually expressing or letting the readers know what you're really all about and letting them get to know you a little bit. So a resume is more of a statement about your capabilities and where you're targeting your career and what have you. And a LinkedIn profile is that as well. But it's actually, I think it's an opportunity to be far more personal about what you believe in and I put in my LinkedIn profile that careers and leadership fascinate me, for instance. And I probably wouldn't write that in a resume, for instance, where I'm talking more to capability.
Mm.
But I would definitely, my preference is first person, and let the write in a way the readers can actually get to know you as a person.
Yeah, I might need to go back and revisit, because I had it in first person, then LinkedIn expert said, oh, you've got to write in third person, Jackie. So I did that. I might need to go back and revisit. But I think that's the message there, is not just to write it and leave it, is to keep it up to date and revisit it, refresh it.
Yeah, I think some people make the mistake of just somehow doing a cut and paste from their resume into their LinkedIn profile, which I definitely wouldn't recommend.
No.
So coming back to your point about personal branding, it's a really powerful way to personally brand yourself. Perhaps have a look at my LinkedIn profile, and you'll get a bit of an idea of what I think about it. But it's a really powerful branding tool.
And that part of your book you mentioned, who's I'm a big fan of his work, Malcolm Gladwell, and you mentioned his work on the tipping point. Just quickly tell us about that.
Yeah, well, tipping point was written a number of years ago now, but I think it's still really current. It's often quoted. You'll hear it being quoted in all sorts of different forums now. As the so-called tipping point, but it was coined by Malcolm Gladwell, and he spoke about it in his book of the same name as a way, the point at which something becomes an epidemic. And he spoke about it in terms of health epidemics or in terms of or fads that took off. For instance, he gave an example of hush puppies, which many of your listeners may not even remember, but they were down to apparently their last 30,000 pairs. And a small cult group in Greenwich Village happened to adopt them, and suddenly the whole brand took off again globally. And he picked up on these themes and patterns that would occur and reach this so-called tipping point where it would really accelerate. And in an organisational context, I'd often think about it as a way to get a ripple through an organisation. So particularly in a low energy way, of getting the ripple through the organisation of what you're trying to develop, and therefore hit that so-called tipping point. He also spoke about the rule of 150, where he said it was really hard to manage organisations over 150 people before you had to start putting managers in who would then filter the information from the organisation. So, and he spoke about a private organisation that built factories within close proximity to each other, with only 150 car spaces. And when the owner of the factory was asked, "Well, how do you know when it's time to build a new factory?" He'd say, "Well, when people stop parking on the grass, when they start parking on the grass." But I think it's about 200 pages, and nowhere there he talks about systems theory, but that's effectively what it's all about.
Yeah, he's got another Blink. Have you read Blink?
Yes, I have, yeah.
Yeah.
Terrific book.
Yeah, yeah, it's great. All his work is really great.
But highly recommend it. The Tipping Point, despite its age, I would highly recommend your readers. It's an enjoyable reading, even if you've got no interest in the subject at all.
Yeah.
It's just an enjoyable couple of hundred pages.
Well, it's a bit like Dale Carnegie's book, How to Win Friends and Influence People. That's still relevant. It's probably more relevant than when he wrote it. So,
yes, indeed.
It's all interesting stuff. And your book, we better get back to your book, Career Conversations, Greg Smith, How to Get the Best from Your Talent Pool. Really enjoyed it. Those that want to find out a bit more about you and find where to get the book, they can find you at deliberatepractice.com.au, and I believe that you hang around on Twitter and also, of course, your LinkedIn. You've got to look at your LinkedIn page. Tremendous. Thank you, Greg Smith, for your time today.
Thanks so much, Jackie.
Thank you. We hope you're enjoying eavesdropping on these interesting conversations. We'll be right back after this. That's the end of another stimulating show. We hope you've enjoyed eavesdropping on our conversation, picked up some tips, learned something new, or at the very least feel inspired. If you just joined us, you've missed a lot, but the podcast will be available on my social media, Jackie Mitchell. Thank you to our worldly and thought-provoking guests. We look forward to your company next Friday. In the meantime, keep taking care of your business mindset.